Welcome to Today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast, brought to you by LGEN, the Local Government Environmental Assistance Network. LGEN is a first-stop shop, providing local governments with user-friendly information on compliance with federal environmental regulations, funding strategies, and tools for advancing healthy and sustainable communities for all. Brought to you by the Environmental Law Institute, under a cooperative agreement with the United States Environmental Protection Agency. ELI makes law work for people, places, and the planet.
Welcome to the Building the Water Workforce, Attracting and Retaining the Next Generation of Utility Workers, an episode of Today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast, produced by the Local Government Environmental Assistance Network under a cooperative agreement between the Environmental Law Institute and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. My name is Cynthia Harris, and I'm Deputy Director of ELI Center for State, Tribal, and Local Environmental Programs.
And I'm Ella Stack, a Research Associate at ELI. Cynthia, we're recording this podcast in November, the month featuring my favorite holiday.
Thanksgiving? I love Thanksgiving. Pumpkin pie, green bean casserole, roasted tofurkey.
World Toilet Day.
What?
World Toilet Day. On November 19th, the entire world celebrates and raises awareness for the importance of having an adequate sanitation system. What could you possibly be more thankful for than an adequate sanitation system?
Well, clean drinking water, for one. It's all kind of connected, I guess.
Exactly. Every November, I reflect on how grateful I am I have clean drinking water and adequate sanitation, and for all the hardworking and seriously unappreciated utility workers who bring us both. What would happen if we didn't have enough highly qualified and dedicated workers working in the water and wastewater sector?
I'd like to pause this introduction and invite all our listeners who appreciate Ella's incredibly subtle lead to take a moment and give this podcast a 5-star rating and review on your favorite app. Is that something we really have to worry about, Ella, not having enough highly qualified and dedicated workers in the water and wastewater sector?
Unfortunately, yes. You see, the latest reports show that the water workforce is shrinking, with so many skilled utility workers retiring and utilities struggling to recruit among Gen Y and Gen Z.
This is incredibly depressing.
But it doesn't have to be. We've invited our special guest today to talk all about what's going on in the water workforce, what these workers do, why what they do is so important, and how utilities, and all of us really, can make sure they keep on doing it. Should we bring in Shannon and Connie now, Cynthia?
Absolutely. Two guests we're super thankful to have here today. Connie Stevens with the Alliance of Indiana Rural Water and Shannon Walton with the National Rural Water Association. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you so much, Cynthia and Ella, for having me here today.
Yes, thank you, ladies. We are looking forward to this. Thank you.
Could you both begin by sharing with our listeners a little bit about who you are and the organizations you work at?
Sure. My name is Connie Stevens. I'm with the Alliance of Indiana Rural Water. I'm the executive director for this association. We are an affiliate of the National Rural Water Association. There is one in every state in the U.S. So in Indiana, we provide training and technical assistance to all of the water and wastewater utilities all across the state. And there's a couple thousand of those across the state. So we have field staff called circuit riders that travel around the state and offer to help, but especially we focus on the small rural systems. We provide not only training, but we help them troubleshoot problems that they come across each day. And there are always problems that pop up. So we may provide something like leak detection, help explain the new rules and regulations that are coming out or warn them about what's coming down the pipe for that. Provide water audits. We help them with their water audits. We may help them with emergency response plans, or status of their asset management plans, things like that. So there's a lot going on at these utilities, and they're usually short-handed, and we do what we can to help them.
Sounds like really important work. How about you, Shannon?
Hi, my name is Shannon Walton. I am the Apprenticeship Program Manager for the National Rural Water Association. As Connie mentioned, the Alliance of Indiana Rural Water is a member of National Rural Water Association. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to training, supporting, and promoting the water and wastewater professionals that serve small and rural communities across the nation. We currently have over 31,000 utility system members.
That is very impressive, and that just gives me a taste of how important this job is. Let's start talking about that, and specifically about the water workforce pipeline, if you'll forgive the pun, and I'll blame you, Connie, for introducing that one. Let's jump in here. I'm a bit curious, what exactly does the quote-unquote water workforce encompass? Whoever wants to take that one.
The water workforce, they're responsible for pumping the water, having the pipeline, of course, out there, but the water gets tested every day. And there's several different processes that go through that. But as it is tested, it is recorded. Someone is doing the lab work. Someone is recording everything that's going on. You need to distribute this out to your customers. And sometimes the customers run into a problem. They may have low water pressure, but there's always something to troubleshoot with that. That's on the water side. And on the wastewater side, when people flush the toilets, it goes down a pipe through lift stations to the main treatment plant. It will go through a process with a grit chamber that brings out all the heavier items and the load that goes through there. And it goes through several processes of cleaning up that water. And the purpose behind that is to put out crystal clean water back out into the rivers and streams, where many times if you have service water in some areas, that water is going back to a water treatment plant. Of course, it's getting treated there again. Now, remember, at the wastewater treatment plant, they were cleaning up the water in really good condition to put out clear, clean water back into the rivers and streams. And now we're going to pump it to a water plant where they're going to test it and make sure it's cleaned. They have to make sure that they remove a lot of different things that come through there.
I've had the privilege of touring a couple water and wastewater treatment plants, and I have to say, I was really impressed just by the size, the scale, the amount of technology involved, and all the folks I saw walking around, looking very busy, very intent, having some fun, but I was really impressed. Would either of you be able to share a couple of the roles that are involved that people might not think about?
The lab technician, the lab superintendent. There are a few names for people in the labs, and those are usually reserved for your bigger systems. Your small system may have one or two people working there. They may have multiple titles for that. So in the field, you may have someone in the distribution system, may have someone as the plant superintendent who is really in charge of the process that's going through the treatment plant. And on the wastewater side, you do have the same thing with lab technicians. You will have a collection system as it is on its way into the treatment plant. There are all these lines throughout the customer service area. As those toilets are flushed and drains are going through there, they will go to lift stations and grinder pumps and be moved through the collection system to the treatment plant for all the treatment process there. So that then for the treatment plant operators, the treatment plants on both the water and wastewater must be certified.
Those sound like jobs that demand really, really specialized skills and training. Could you talk a bit more about the certification and training involved?
Yes. When you become a certified operator, at least in the state of Indiana, you have to work for 2 years at the treatment facility, and you must have hands-on experience with all the processes in that facility. So you have a mentor who is guiding you through this every day. So 40 hours a week, or close to 40 hours a week throughout 2 years, must have the on-the-job training. And many times there's classroom work that they can take. once you become a certified operator, you have to have continuing education units that you keep up on. There is a lot of responsibility with a certified operator. You're actually holding someone's health in your hands. If you do not pay attention to everything that you're testing for and watching what water goes through there and test it before it's distributed out to the customer, there could be some detrimental things happen. Not only will people get sick, it could be worse. So those responsibilities are pretty intense, and that's why it is so important to have a certified operator. And those exams to get your certification is very difficult. It requires math and science and chemistry, biology. There's all sorts of things involved with getting your certification.
When I joined this industry in 2018, I was really surprised at the diversity across the nation from state to state, just what those licensing and certification requirements are.
Could you also please touch on a little bit about the new technology emerging in the water and wastewater field? I've heard that software developers and information security analysts are two of the occupations growing the fastest within the water workforce.
That is true that those two occupations are in high demand. Technology is something that our current group of certified operators do not have quite as much experience with, and many things have changed. You could now have a SCADA system out there that you could constantly monitor water towers and the rate of the flow going through the pipes. So there's a lot of technology involved, as well as drones that will fly over water towers and service areas. So all of these things are very important. And everything, the more up to date we get in this industry, the easier it will be to keep within your permit parameters. And every utility has a permit parameter that they must stay within those guidelines. And this new technology is definitely a plus for them. This is very helpful.
Shannon, did you have anything that you'd like to add about the new technology? I can see Ella here. When you said drones, her eyes widen.
I would like to just touch on cybersecurity. Is a big issue that's come on board in the last couple of years within our industry. When you're trying to engage younger people, the youth for the next generation, we really do have to work on highlighting some of the cooler technologies that are coming along, such as the use of drones in our industry. I heard some great stories about how drones are being used to check out water towers. There are some robot technology that they're using in both the water and the wastewater side in our industry.
Yes, especially on the wastewater side, what they call TVing a system is actually like a robot. Sometimes they call them a pig or an alligator that goes through those lines and can actually TV everything in there. And some equipment also cleans them out as they go through that line. You can see it as it's doing it, and there's a circular brush that cleans and pushes those on out. There's air relief valves that they can work through. There are a lot of things. There's the GIS system where you have inventory of where all your pipes and valves and lift stations are, where the pumps are, and you can read with that GIS equipment access for that. So you've located all those with your GIS equipment. You have that on a computer and even on your iPhones. And you can see when there's something wrong, if something's going on, you could troubleshoot from that information that's on your phone now. There's apps for everything that goes on. Actually, there's a lot of fun to be had with this. There's so much to do within the industry with technology now.
There is an app for that.
I can see how this is a field that requires both smarts and skill. And you go to work every day knowing what you do really matters. But I can also imagine that it's a tough area to recruit. You have to keep people safe and healthy, meet these certification requirements, deal with angry customers and high stakes, and not get the pay or respect you deserve. Could you all please talk a little bit about this exodus that's currently happening in the wastewater sector?
Yeah, I'll start there. When I first started in 2018 with the National Rural Water Association, one of the first reports that I came across for the water and wastewater was the Brookings Institute report. And it discussed this industry losing 30 to 50% of the workforce this decade. And I actually thought that that was a typo. I didn't really think that it meant this decade. So learning that that was in fact the truth made what we do at National Rural Water Association with our apprenticeship program even more important. We're in the midst of a retirement bubble, and we do have an aging workforce. And then when you're trying to recruit for occupation that literally has the word wastewater in the title of the occupation, as you can imagine, probably every 18-year-old in the world isn't super excited until they learn about all of the cool technologies that are used in this industry, as well as that they're really doing something to serve their communities and to protect the environment.
That's 50%. I think my jaw dropped when I heard that, Shannon. You mentioned that you have the retirements, but are there any other driving forces behind this? That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. I also think that this industry hasn't done the best job in the world. I hate to sound insulting, but as far as succession planning, sometimes I think the industries are a little bit asleep at the wheel when they really don't track and pay attention to their workforce. And then there, of course, there are a lot of unknowns. In this day and age too, there became the whole phenomenon that everyone wants to get out of the small town. And so we're really trying to instill kind of the homegrown aspect. It's not the end of the world, and that you really are serving the communities that you grew up in, and that it's not something horrible and bad to stay and serve the community that you were raised in.
So that would be a challenge that small utilities face, I suppose, that you wear many hats. Do you find that's the case for these smaller utilities?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Especially in small communities, they wear many hats. They're the dog catcher. They're the water guy, the wastewater guy. But the one thing about it is they are well trained, because they have the opportunity, or they have the need that they must know everything that's going on. If there's an issue at one end of town, or they know they have a troubled area that pumps tend to fail in this area for a particular reason, those are the things they will focus on. When you're in a big system, you have so many people, they each have an area that they focus on. So you have several people responsible for certain things. In small communities, they pretty much have to know it all. They have to know what's going in from the beginning to the end and be able to troubleshoot everything in between. Your comment earlier about small towns and people needing to leave small towns to find good jobs, and that's many times not always true. Working at a utility system in a small town is a very important job. And as she mentioned, it's helping the community. They love the folks around them, and there is a lot of responsibility that comes with it.
That really sounds like a fulfilling job, Connie. And these are pretty decently compensated careers, not just jobs, but careers, whether you're in a small town or working for a larger system. Is that the case? Can either of you touch on that a bit?
It has not been that well compensated, but it has improved immensely over the last few years. And it is our intent with a training program that it will continue to be a very well compensated job. And they're seeing that more nowadays, just in the last 3 years, that, hey, we need someone here that's committed to the community and can raise a family here. So they are giving those things consideration now and the benefits that need to come with it. But that has not been the case in the past, and that could be part of the problem. But Shannon mentioned many industries did not do a very good job at promoting the needs for these jobs or having a succession plan we hope to do a better job of that moving forward. Many people, I've talked to so many that said, I never knew this job was even out there. They're interested now, but they never knew it was there, which is still the case in many areas.
Absolutely. And Cynthia and Ella, another aspect with the wages in this industry is that we're really competing with the same types of individuals that could easily go into construction trades, for instance, and start out down the pathway at almost making double of what they're making in our industry.
Yeah, that's a really good point. When I think about what we're willing to pay as customers and citizens, to having clean water, making certain that our wastewater is treated before it's released into our water bodies. I mean, that's, you get what you pay for, right? And it's just such an important job after, especially hearing the two of you, which brings me to a really important question. What's going to be the repercussions if we don't encourage young folks or second career folks to dive into this industry?
You're going to have communities that don't have safe drinking water. That's kind of the worst case scenario that's out there.
I have another question regarding how easy it is to move around in this field. A lot of people in America are moving around all the time. And I'm wondering, given the different certification programs in different states and different localities, can you pick up as a water workforce worker and move to a different state and easily integrate into their utility system?
Many states have different requirements. Most of them, though, if you were a certified operator in one state, you should be able to meet the requirements and take the exam in another state and be able to provide that service in that state. I was going to ask Shannon if she didn't have conversations with the states, and she's on the national level, of what it's been like moving from one state to another for someone.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Though there is a lot of diversity, a lot of systems are like-minded, especially the small system in different areas. So sometimes it's just taking a few courses to catch them up to the needs of that particular state with their licensing and certification exams.
Shannon, you said a very important word, which is diversity. So I'm going to put you both on the spot and ask the difficult question about diversity. Some stats that I've seen indicate that this is a sector that is overwhelmingly male, overwhelmingly white. Do you think this contributes at all to some of this difficulty around recruitment?
Yes, I absolutely do think that the National Rural Water Association, through our apprenticeship programs, all of our state affiliates have an affirmative action plan that they outline. And it's really, it goes back to that, if we're doing the same thing that we've always done, we are never going to be able to change the diversity of our industry. So diversity, equity, inclusion is really important to National Rural Water Association and all of our state affiliates. And this next program year, which just began October 1st, that's really our main focus this year, is to try to find community organizations that we can partner with in hopes to change the demographic of what our typical water and wastewater worker looks like.
Connie, do you have anything to add from Indiana's perspective or your experience?
Yes, I would agree with what Shannon said, that yes, overall you see mainly men in this industry. But I am excited to say that we have more women coming into this, not just women, but different ethnicities. And how that's working out is just great. I love the excitement. We had a young girl actually give a presentation during our conference. She's still in high school, and it had to do on the wastewater side. So not only is she young, still in high school, female, and she was Indian, and she was so fascinated by the lab works of studying nanoplastics in water treatment and at the wastewater treatment plant. So she went to her local wastewater treatment plant and started asking questions, and they were excited that she was asking those questions, and it got their attention. All the men at that treatment plant were anxious to share the information with her, and I think it is starting to grow, but it has been a long, slow road.
It's encouraging to hear that. We're going to take a quick break now, so pause, grab a glass of water, and we'll be right back. Elgene also offers other resources to help water and wastewater utilities develop. Check out Elgene's latest webinar to learn about how small water and wastewater systems can prevent cyber attacks and create a culture around cybersecurity at elgene.net/webinars.
Thank you for listening to the show. Before we return to today's local environment, the Compliance Podcast, a reminder that you can find a variety of user-friendly tips, funding resources, and other tools for ensuring your community complies with federal environmental regulations by visiting elgene.net. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We're here with Connie Stevens at the Alliance of Indiana Rural Water and Shan Walton at the National Rural Water Association. We just ended the first segment on a nail biter. Will our water and wastewater systems go down the toilet because we're not recruiting enough utility workers? But over the break, Shannon was telling us that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. Back in 2017, the National Rural Water Association received approval for national guideline standards of apprenticeship with the United States Department of Labor Office of Apprenticeship. Registered apprenticeship is very new to this industry. This industry has been embedded and ingrained in just the licensing and certification required in each state. So apprenticeship, bringing that into this industry is literally trying to transform the mindset, if you will, of an entire industry and how they look at training their future workforce. So through registered apprenticeship, we now have 34 state rural water associations that participate in apprenticeship nationwide. Ms. Connie with the Alliance of Indiana Rural Water, she was actually one of the first states to come on board with registered apprenticeship. And to date, we have 456 apprentices registered nationwide. And more importantly, we have now completed 88 apprentices nationwide. And when you look at it like that is now 88 communities that are going to be served by these individuals that may or may not have found this industry without registered apprenticeship. So we're really proud of that. Our apprenticeship programs are 4,000 hour on-the-job training. And that is always partnered with related technical instruction. So 288 hours of classroom or coursework training combined with 4,000 hours of on-the-job training that they're getting systematic, structured instruction, taking that institutional knowledge from the mentor and passing it down to the next generation.
Those are statistics to be really proud of. Now, I see next to you our surprise third guest.
Yes, we have Sophia Overton with us. She is in the water treatment department of the town of Del Mar, and she is the water superintendent, and I will let her tell her story. Thank you so much for being here with us, Sophia.
Thank you, Shannon. Thank you, ladies, for having me today.
Welcome.
Like Shannon said, I am the water superintendent for the little town that's too big for one state, the town of Del Mar, which we are a bi-state town. We are both Maryland and Delaware, which we have to be licensed for both of those states as operators. So it's pretty awesome working here. Just a little bit about me. I started as the clerk in this office in the Public Works Department and saw the opportunity to move through levels of growth with becoming an operator and diving into the water operation system. And it has been a whirlwind of learning and just growing in this department and fighting my way through almost in a field that is male dominated, but it is very fulfilling knowing that my residents and the customers that receive the water coming out of the system are getting safe drinking water. So I'm pretty proud of myself for that.
That's really impressive, Sophia. And I'm wondering, could you share a little bit about how you entered into the sector? I mean, what was your journey? What was Sophia's journey?
So my journey started 11 and a half years ago with the town. And again, I was the clerk inside the mayor's office. This position came open in the public works department for another clerk. And I saw the growth opportunity. And we have a small department. We had a public works director and we had a clerk and we had a few operators. And as people are leaving positions, the opportunity to grow and learn was there. And I just took advantage of it. I was the sponge and took advantage of what that could do for me and my position. And growing as an operator and then going in the superintendent position was almost like having a baby. Because everything was happening all at one time. And with that, it was, when I say like having a baby, because the succession plan wasn't set up for me. I was learning hands-on as I go, just like a mom. You learn hands-on as you go. And so I have learned and grown through this position to know what the expectations are and how to do things properly.
That's like that proverbial drinking from the fire hose, right, Sophia?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we're so lucky to have you with us today. Shannon mentioned apprenticeships as one strategy that NRWA is employing to attract and retain people in this industry. And you mentioned drinking from the fire hose. I wonder what apprenticeships look like for on-the-ground training at your facility.
The apprenticeship program, I was excited when I heard that it was coming into the states that I'm currently licensed. Unfortunately, I wasn't privy to the apprenticeship programs because I was already the licensed operator, but we had some operators that were going into training that they were able to jump right in. And so we have two at our facility that have gone through the apprenticeship program. One of them already has their license and the other one that's getting ready to take their license exam, as well as presenting the pre-apprenticeship program. I teach 2 days a week at our local high school to our juniors and seniors, the pre-apprenticeship operator program for water and wastewater.
Yeah, you got to get them when they're young. And probably when you're seeing these newer folks coming in under the apprenticeship program, you're probably thinking, darn it, I wish I'd had that as well. A question, could you walk us through a day in the life? I assume that not every day is similar, but you know, just to give us a taste of what you do.
So day in the life as an operator, I come in and the first thing I'm doing is checking my plant, walking my plant, making sure that the fixtures and everything on the outside of the plant are still intact. And then going in the building, making sure none of the wires have jumped out of the panels or anything, because, you know, squirrels like to get into stuff and make things go haywire. So we go in and we check out all our numbers and check out the system to make sure everything is operating right, the pumps, and check the wells. And then we go and get a sample of the water from one of our towers. And we test it. We test it to make sure that our numbers are in line with what the state guidelines require us to have. And because we are a level 4 plant, we are testing to check the fluorides and the irons and things of that nature to make sure they're all in line as well. And normally I come back in the office, have reporting to do. I'm checking with contractors on doing preventative maintenance while other things. We rotate out the different pumps, the different wells, because we have two wells. So we're working off of one well, we'll maintenance and do the things necessary for that. So that's pretty much the day in the life of what we come in and work with. And speaking with our residents, you know, we have people call in and asking questions and want to know, or if they have a concern, they'll call.
A couple follow-up questions on that, Sophia. So which would you rather deal with, the squirrels or an irate customer? You don't have to answer that. I'm just curious.
I don't mind dealing with either, because prior to me coming into this industry, I worked in the service industry, and I absolutely love putting out the flames, because I think the reason why most customers and residents have flames is because they don't have the knowledge of what goes on behind the scenes. And so when you educate them about their service that we're providing to them, and they have a better understanding, they feel like they're being heard, and they have a better understanding of what we do on our side.
Well, my hat's off to you, because I once worked for constituent services working for city council member, and we had some interesting calls from folks with water and wastewater issues. Water, where some car had ridden over a pipeline that was out because of repair work, and then someone whose toilet literally exploded. And we had the public information officer with the wastewater system, who was the most calm, most phlegmatic, laid-back person I ever met, and he dealt with that situation. So I can just imagine wearing the hats you do, what you have to deal with.
We've gotten those type of calls as well. And again, it's about making sure that they're being heard. They don't want to feel like they're being pushed off or that their situation is not important. We do put things in perspective of urgency, because we are a small rural town. Our employee staff is limited. So if we are doing something that is fixing a pipe in the middle of the street or something of that magnitude, we determine whether or not we need to stop what we're doing to go fix whatever the resident's problem is. However, sewer takes precedence, because we don't want anything bad happening to our residents if something is of that magnitude going on. So we get them, but we take care of them.
Yeah, so this household, they got a brand new carpet at the end, so they were very happy. So that was the silver lining. And I want to go back to something you said, because you said Del Mar spans two states, and we were talking earlier with Shannon Connie about certification requirements. Was that an issue for you?
No, so the Delaware license is a base level license when you first come out of class. And your Maryland license, depending on what level plant you work for. So fortunately, we work for a level 4 plant, and that is because of what we treat for and what we test for. And so both of my licenses are now equal, because Delaware said, yep, we'll take all of what you have and what you do for the Maryland side, and it is reciprocated on that side of the state. So I receive reciprocity on my Delaware license.
Very nice. And I see Ella's waving her hand here, because I think she wants to ask if you have drones. Is that right, Ella?
Yes. I've heard rumors of the kind of technology you get to use in the wastewater industry. Could you tell us a little bit about what kind of technology you use?
We have a drone operator on the Delaware side that comes up with his drone, and he takes pictures for us. And actually, he's going to come up and do something for us with the kids at the high school. So we personally don't have the drones here at the plant. But fortunately, like I said, the rural water systems, both on the Maryland and Delaware side, are a great asset to us in those senses with different types of technology.
That is really neat, just to have that kind of job where you're making such a big difference to folks, and you get to play with these cool new toys. So I have to ask you something, because we were talking earlier about diversity. I mean, you're a woman, you're a minority in this field that is male dominated, not very representative so far. Is there anything you want to share about that from your experience or advice for local utilities to do a better job?
I think, with my personal experiences, for utilities to do a better job at succession planning and retention, that the both of those are important when your employees feel like they're needed and they're wanted in their job, and not to feel as though if you share the information that someone will take your job, because the intimidation factor is there big time. Because again, this field is male dominated, and specifically white male dominated. And for me as a woman, a Black female, punching my way through this field, it has not been easy because of the intimidation factor, because of the education factor, because they don't want to share the information. So it's very important that the utility systems share information that they've gathered over the last 25 years, because a lot of things isn't on paper. A lot of knowledge is very hands-on. So it's almost like you're speaking to your ancestors and having to say, can you give me this information so I can write it down so I can pass it on to the next? And for the older generation that is in this field, not to be scared to move into the technology age and better their utility systems.
That's very sage advice, I'd say, across the board.
Mm-hmm. It's been interesting because since we had a former public works director, and he was a wealth of knowledge. However, he did not want to share a lot of his knowledge. So when he retired, and I was the next senior person to go in line for the superintendent position, which he held before I almost went in blinded. Thankfully, with my engineer, the rural water systems on both Delaware and Maryland, and some of my other coworkers, we learned a lot on how to do things the proper way. We learned a lot on how to make things better and simpler, and not to work hard, but to work smart. So it is very important for the older generation to not be afraid to move into the technical age, but also to share the value of the information, wealth of the knowledge.
I can see how that's super important. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about trust in the water sector. I was looking at a recent poll conducted by the American Water Works Association, which found that Black Americans' perceptions of water safety has been declining in the last year. And, you know, we have instances like Jackson, Mississippi and Flint, Michigan, which are bad for that as well. Would you say it's feasible that increasing diversity in the water workforce could potentially also help restore trust?
Oh, I absolutely do think so. And the fact that I am teaching at the local high school and the group that I have were volunteer students that signed up to take the apprenticeship program. And I have two young ladies in the class. One is, I believe, of Spanish descent. And then we have an African-American male in there. And so being able to see someone that looks like you, or see that there's other people in the industry besides what they would typically see as the norm, has kept them coming to the class. Like, I have a class of 12, and every week they show up. It's a volunteer thing. So kudos to them for showing up for themselves, but also showing up for me, because it's important that they see themselves in these type of positions.
Well, I just can't think of a better note to end this on. Thank you so much for joining us today, Connie, Shannon, Sophia. Sophia taking a break from her very, very important job for the citizens of Del Mar. So we do appreciate that. Anything else you ladies would like to share with our listeners? Shannon, how can utilities learn more about taking advantage of or starting their own apprenticeship program?
Yeah, great question, and thank you for asking. So we have on our website, www.nrwa.org, we have an apprenticeship page that actually will lead you directly to an application website, an apprenticeship application and tracking system that connects with all of our state associations that have registered apprenticeship programs. And they are welcome to contact any of the individual states to also receive more information as far as participating in apprenticeship on their own. We welcome not just the states that are participating, but if there are systems in states that we do not have a state affiliate that is participating, they can contact National Rural Water Association, and we can give them all of the information about coming on board under the national umbrella. appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I love a lot of the comments that both Connie and Sophia have made, and that kind of enlightens and reinvigorates me with what I do with the apprenticeship program, because I think Sophia is an amazing example of not only paving the way and changing the diversity, but also apprenticeship isn't just about the water and wastewater occupations. It's about creating future leaders for our industry.
I would like to mention and include in that kudos to Sophia. She mentioned educating her customers. When something goes wrong, they respond to the customers right away. Educating your customers is what gets approval out there whenever you have to have a water or wastewater rate increase, because that usually riles people up. But the more we educate them, the easier that process will be. And the other thing I want to give Sophia kudos about is she had mentioned sharing the knowledge. She did not get that, but clearly she is going out of her way and going above and beyond to share her knowledge with the younger generation and get them in there. These are jobs that are going to be needed forever. They're not going to be packed up and moved away or out of the country anywhere. We need water everywhere. So they're going to be here forever. These positions are going to be needed forever. And I'm sure that Sophia is going to set an example about sharing the knowledge. Don't be afraid to share it.
That's really important. And how can our listeners learn more about the initiatives you have underway at the Alliance of Indiana Rural Water, Connie?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. You can find our website at inh2o.org. We have all kinds of information on there about our apprenticeship program and other initiatives that we're doing right now, how we're helping utilities all over the state of Indiana, as well as a Facebook page with the Alliance.
Thank you so much, Connie. And let's ask Sophia to close us out with a bit of inspiration advice for aspiring water workers in our audience and utilities working to recruit. I'm putting you on the spot, but you are inspiring high school students every week, so you should probably have some wisdom to share.
My inspiration for my group that I have at the high school is just knowing that you can be working in your community to bring safe and quality water to your fellow classmates, your fellow residents, your neighbors, your animals, whatever it may be, to your favorite restaurant. And so that kind of gets their wheels turning to know that they could have a hand in it, knowing that they did that.
Ditto to that. Thank you so much. And telling everyone to share a little more appreciation for the water and wastewater workers doing this hard, important, and fulfilling work in the community. So I want to thank you once again, Sophia, Connie, and Shannon, and thanks to our wonderful, wonderful listeners, too, as always.
We are incredibly thankful for all that you and the tens of thousands of other water and wastewater workers do.
Until next time, this is Cynthia Harris with the Environmental Law Institute, closing out another episode of Today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast.
And this is Ella Stack, reminding you to follow our show on your favorite podcast app and urging you to show appreciation to the water workforce serving your community all year round.
And that's a wrap.
Thank you for listening to Today's Local Environment, the Compliance Podcast, a podcast brought to you by LGEEN, the Local Government Environmental Assistance Network. Visit us at lgeen.net and on social media for user-friendly tips, funding resources, and other tools ensuring your community complies with federal environmental regulations. And please, take our latest survey while you're there. Together, we can advance healthy and sustainable communities for all.